morning. It's time for the Clay County Corner, coming to you live from the historic Clay County Courthouse in Salina, Tennessee. For the next hour, the Clay County Corner will inform you of what's happening in our community. Sit back and enjoy the program.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome everyone into our annual session here at the historic Clay County Courthouse of the Clay County Corner. We come to you live and in living color on your radio dial, which happens to be WVFB FM 101.5, Kicks Country, each Thursday morning here at 9 o'clock with a rebroadcast this evening at 6 o'clock. And also remind everyone that these shows are streamed on the Delhalla Horizon newspaper site, so you can go in there and listen to them. And if you need to remind some of your neighbors to go tune their radio in, this would be a good time to do that. I know we've got a good show lined up this morning. I've got Mr. Danny Stone here with us this morning, and there is no telling where we may get off to and talk about. I think he is officially with the TWRA, with the fisheries. I think we used to call them creel checkers. I think they've got official names for them now. Used to, they'd go around all over Delhalla Lake all night and measure trout and check how many trout were being caught. But I think it's expanded a little bit beyond that anymore with the amount of nighttime fishing and stuff that goes on Delhalla. And right now, we're going to talk about fishing season this spring, which has been hotter than a $3 pistol, as they used to say up on the dale. We've had folks are catching some 4 and 5 pounders galore this spring. So I guess that raising the water up and down and all that kind of stuff, it didn't disturb the fish too much. They still know if they see a good-looking bait going in front of them what to do with it. We'll talk about that a little bit, and we may wander off on some other stuff. And of course, we've got our birthday and anniversary club here where we give away one of those delicious ice cream cakes from over at the Dairy Queen. And we've got a few people on that list this morning, and we'll announce those about halfway through the show and then draw out a winner later on. And then the second half of the show, I've got Mr. Richard Accurso coming in this morning to talk a little bit about the American Legion and maybe some legislation that's been passed helping to fund and get the Upper Cumberland Veterans Cemetery. I think maybe got some news on that, and maybe might talk a little bit more about what's going on with them and some of the things that they're coming up with the American Legion. But with that, I think we'll take a little short break, work in a few words from the people that make this possible. And, of course, we want to thank all the folks that do make this possible by sponsoring it, and those, and also the three-star committee and the Clay Chamber that help make sure that we get this show on here each Thursday morning at 9 o'clock. But with that, we'll take a little short break. We're going to come back, and I'm going to let Danny do some talking and just see exactly what we've got going on up around the dale. We've had folks from the Corps here and had Mr. Bartlett last week talking about camping. Now we're going to get some of the serious stuff, maybe. We'll be back just in a minute.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center, a Grace Healthcare facility serving you from the heart, restoring dignity and rekindling hope. Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center specializes in rehab services for those who need therapy in order to return to their home after a surgery or illness. With a full staff of physical, occupational, and speech therapists, they serve patients' needs through multiple levels of care, including skill, traditional, and respite care. Call today to speak with their admissions coordinator for more information. 931-243-3139.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
I want to be a warm place on a cool day.
I want to be a bike that races around the country.
I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. Brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone. John just walked through. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
So he's up in a kicking again this week, and I think he's going over to check with him over at the chamber. I believe he's recuperating. He's going to be back with us. We'll have to get him here on the show one of these days and tell us where he's been hiding the last 3 or 4 months. I'm sure he don't want to remember any of that, though. But thanks, John. We'll see you later. Let's see. I've got a couple of announcements here. I got a message this morning from Miss Beth McMurtry with the over at the high school, the FFA, and they have their greenhouse open there now at the school, and they're open during basically during school hours from 7:30 in the morning till about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they have got all kinds of good stuff over there, plants and baskets. They've got hanging baskets of wave petunias, different of the vining dew plant, mixed baskets of different flowers, Boston ferns, Kimberly queen, tomato plants, peppers, cucumbers, squash, zucchini, cauliflower, broccoli, and strawberry plants. So anything you need, drop over by there and do a little business with the folks over at the high school. And get Miss Beth to take you around and show you some of the things they're doing over there, some of the projects they've got going. I think you'll be amazed at some of the things going on over there at Clay County High School. And, of course, once again, we'll remind everyone that we'll be doing our birthday and anniversary club here right now pretty quick. And also, I guess since I've got him sitting here, good morning, Danny.
Good morning, Mr. Thomas.
Just exactly once again, what is your official capacity now?
Well, I'm a wildlife aide. They call it for Tennessee Wildlife. I run creel surveys most of the time on Center Hill and Dale Hall and sometimes Cordell Hole. The Caney Fork River and Obie River, just everywhere they send me to. Now I'm working Dale Hall and Center Hill.
Okay, now what does that involve, Danny? I know we've talked about this before.
We'll pull up and ask the people how long they've been fishing, what they're catching off, got to measure the way they're fished, just gather a bunch of information about the job that we're doing, their suggestions, if they have any suggestions, how we're managing the reservoirs or the streams, and just, it's more like gathering information.
Okay, and all that information then goes to TWRA.
Right. It's public information. When they get it all tatted up and everything, then they'll use that to help set regulations or, you know, we need money from the legislature to use, you know, see how much money is being spent on Dale Hollow.
And it kind of gives you an idea how many people are actually out there fishing.
Right, right.
I mean, we know we're full of tourists that are riding up and down the lake, but, and I guess that this is probably what they, I know that they do like I don't know whether they do a daily fishing report, but I know they do weekly fishing reports.
They
publish that's based on all this information.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's, we'll go back a little bit and your predecessor, I like to talk about him a little every once in a while. I don't know if he's not with us anymore, but a great gentleman that used to come up and spend some time with me back in the days when I worked midnights up at Cedar Hill, and that's Mr. Delano.
Mr. Delano Copeland was the first fellow I ever worked with and one of the hardest working, finest fellows ever been around. And he knew the area, and he was just a fine man. And I worked with him I've been working 39 years, and I guess I've worked 20-some-odd years with Delano.
And I do know one thing, that he was probably even worse than you are about his fishing secrets. I think Delano had one fishing partner. I believe that was his brother. And he would, I'd say he probably wouldn't even let you go fishing with him, would he?
his brother called me the other night, wanting me to help him buy some crappie fishing. And, you know, since I've quit fishing tournaments, I'm not near as secretive as I used to be. I'd rather see somebody else catch them and be happy as I had to catch them myself, you know.
Now, I used to, we would go over to the Pizza Hut, where they have the Pizza Hut buffet on Tuesday night, and Delano and his wife, they came over there basically as long as he was able to walk in the door and stuff himself with pizza on Tuesday night. And I'd walk through the door, and he'd hold his arm up and put his hand down on his elbow to let me know that he'd caught a bunch of crappie about 16 or 18 inches long that week. And I'd do everything but get down on my hands and knees and beg him just to tell me, you know, or take me fishing or something. But he never could take the hand. another old fisherman that I know used to come up there a lot and fish by himself in the daytime, and that was Jack Holt. I'm sure you remember. Was you ever new Jack or not?
Very well, very well. He would come up and fish Wednesday afternoon, Thursday, Friday, and go home Saturday morning, all spring long.
And he would always come by himself?
He'd come by himself, wouldn't let nobody fish with him. He threw one bait. He threw a flying rod, and that's it.
And that was the only thing?
And he could catch them, too.
And he would catch fish when nobody else would think there was a fish left in that lake. I mean, he'd come in with a stringer full of them. And, of course, his brother was more infamous than he was. His brother, Jimmy Holt, I think he did a bunch of TV shows.
Tennessee Outdoor, Mercy Tennessee, something.
And newspaper articles and things. But Jack was actually the fisherman in the family.
He was a real fisherman, too.
And, well, now, while we're going on a nostalgia thing, let's back up a little bit farther again and talk about some of the old guides that used to be on the lake up here. And I know we're getting ready to do this sesquicentennial thing, and hopefully there'll be some folks that'll turn some information. I know a couple of names. One name that comes out to me automatically is a man named Mr. Cluer Spivey.
I miss him. I tell you, of course, like I say, him and his brother Perry, Perry worked with my daddy with the Culver, and, of course, I knew him all my life, and they were fine people.
And I know Mr. Cluer, he fished out of Cedar Hill a whole lot, and he would fish in their little green fishing boat. I think they've actually started out as a brown-built fiberglass boat here, built here in Salina, and that was basically all he would fish in. And I can remember, you know, these guys would come in, and they'd have these big, fancy bass boats, and the guys there at the dock would call Mr. Cluer and say, we got a trip for you tomorrow. But he would walk over the hill and see that big 20-foot bass boat there, and he'd walk over where they were tied to the dock, and they'd untie the boat. He'd put his foot up on the front of it, and he'd say, you these fellas? And they'd say, yeah. But he'd just take his foot and push the boat away to the dock and say, you boys have a good day. I don't fish in them things.
You know, Mr. Thompson, one of the biggest smallmouth I've ever seen, it was laying in the bottom of the freezer. It's Cedar Hill, and it was in the 70s. And Cluer was guiding these people, and it was supposed to weigh over 9 pounds. But they took me up there to look at it, and it was a great big fish. I mean, it was unreal. He was guiding, I believe it was from New York or somewhere, but his clients caught it.
Okay, now, you basically grew up in and around the lake, and I know that to you, this has to have been a dream career for you to be able to do what you're doing now.
Well, I'm an outdoors person. I've always worked outside. I love to farm. I love to hunt and fish. And about 99 days out of 100 on the lake working is very, very enjoyable. You meet lots of fine people, and I've met people. I've been working this for my 39th year, and I've met people that I've checked for all 39 years. A lot of them's getting pretty old, you know, but from up north, I've really enjoyed it. Of course, as any job in the public, you know, you have the bad days too, you know.
Right. Okay, now something else that just entered my mind. I know that you have also a special friend, Tom, wildlife painter.
Philip Crowe?
Yes, yeah. Tom Philip Crowe.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about him and your association with him, Danny.
I guided him how I got to know him, and I had no idea who he was. My daddy did. This was in the late 80s, early 90s, and I guided him and started telling me all this stuff. And he's one of the top wildlife artists there is. And
in the whole United States.
Right. And he's done several state duck stamps things and paint lots of dogs. He's the best painting lab that I've ever seen. But he painted I built a pond up in the edge of Kentucky, duck hunt on him. He painted the original painting of that place. And I wouldn't take nothing for you. I've met a lot of Denny Crum. I used to see him real regular, you know, and Kentucky football coach. I'd check him, and I had to gouge him a little bit about, you know, if y'all ever beat Tennessee, and that didn't go over very well, but I enjoyed it.
I know with Philip, I mean, I was in the print business for a little while, and I know that he did numerous state stamps for basically every state in the United States.
Right.
If you look at what they call the duck stamp,
right.
I think they would do like one of those every so often for each one of the states. And I think he basically did one for every state in the United States.
Just about, I'd say.
And like you said, his dog prints. I remember one, especially one that he had was called Frank and Jesse. It had two dogs in it. It had bandanas on it.
for Texas, I believe, is who he done that for.
Yeah.
And I know it's interesting, the people that come to this lake over the years. I know growing up, I can remember Ted Williams,
right,
who made a number of trips here to Dale Hollow and Cedar Hill. And, you know, it seems like that we have lost the luster of that a little bit here, and for a long time maybe leaned more to just tourists. But now I think, and we'll talk about this just in a minute when we come back from break, and that is how much our fishing has actually picked up, and, you know, some of the reasons why that's happened. We'll take a little short break, and we'll be right back.
Tri-County Electric offers our member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from overwhelming your budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, owned and operated by those we serve.
Alvin and the Chipmunks want to remind you to keep bacteria in food from making you ill with four simple steps.
Needs to be a walk in the park.
Clean, wash hands and surfaces often.
I'm waiting for the rinse cycle.
Separate, keep raw meats away from ready-to-eat food.
Yep.
Cook, make sure meat, poultry, and seafood is cooked to the right temperature.
Fire in the hole!
And chill, refrigerate food properly.
Bingo.
Check your steps at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council. The road trip to food safety starts at foodsafety.gov.
Recycling means to use something again. Newspapers can be used to make new newspapers. Aluminum cans can be used to make new aluminum cans. Glass jars can be used to make new glass jars. Recycling often saves energy and natural resources. It almost always takes less energy to make a product from recycled materials than it does to make it from new materials. Don't forget to add up the savings and be energy wise.
Welcome back, everyone. Danny Stone is still here with me, and I know one of the things that I wanted to talk a little bit about was the, and all at once we think it's a sudden resurgence, but that is bass fishing on Dale Hollow Lake again. And going back, Danny, a number of years ago, when Dale Hollow Lake was put on what was called the slot limit, explain to folks exactly what that is and how much resistance that met from all the sportsmen and fishermen when it first came out.
Well, in the 80s, the smallmouth fishing took a dive, you know, downward. And maybe in around 1990, we put an 18-inch size limit on to get the population back, and it exploded it up to about 18 inches. Then they come up with moving the fish up in a slot. You know, from 16 to 21, you can't harvest anything. And it was really, really going well till the summer we had the drought. I don't know if it's 2011 or 12, I can't remember.
Yeah.
And we had a die-off of something happening in the lake, and nobody can figure out what happened. But anyway, they're back now, and I've seen more big fish this spring than I've seen since 1986. It is unreal what the smallmouth's done, and the largemouth population is off the charts. It jumped up real big 3 or 4 years ago and kind of stabilized, and Pickett County has a spring tournament every year, a two-day tournament, and they set a record for the weight this time. It took over 46 pounds to win in 2 days. Todd Beatty won it, and they had won nearly 9 pounds, and there was another largemouth caught the same day between 8.5 and 9 pounds, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, now let's do a little distinguishing between the largemouth and the smallmouth. A lot of people think, well, they're just bad fish, but they're nothing at all alike, are they? You know, that's the habitat. Where would you be most likely to catch a largemouth?
You know, sometimes they share the same habitat, but smallmouth are more main lake oriented. They'll get back in the creeks at times when the shad move back and everything. Of course, largemouth will move out in the activist spawn, but they'll go back in the creeks, most of them in spawn things. A lot of smallmouth spawn in the main lake flats. But it's now they're catching more of them mixed, you know, mixed together, sharing the same places. The spotted bass has sort of went away. We don't know what's going on with that, but they're making a slight comeback. So, but the largemouth, smallmouth is, I'm just afraid everybody's going to get spoiled when something does go down, and they'll think, you know, Years ago, I mean, I've won major tournaments up here with 12 and 13 pounds. Now, if you ain't got 21 or 22 pounds, and that 12 or 13 pounds will be six or seven fish.
Yeah.
That's how things have changed, and it's really, really good.
You know, and protecting the weight of the fish and the size of the fish, it made all the difference in the world, didn't it?
It does, and people has changed, too. You know, back when I first started working, if they caught fish, they thought they had to kill it. And now catch and release has come along, and I really believe people does a better job of taking care of them. If they didn't, with the pressure we have nowadays, there wouldn't be none. I mean, the electronics, you know, and just say somebody fishing every day of the year, and three-fourths of the year of a night is somebody fishing.
Okay, and let's talk a little bit, John. We know that the smallmouth fishing gets most of the publicity because of Mr. D.L. Hayes is catching that, was it 40 pound? You know, you have stories growing over
right,
the years.
Right, I understand. Yeah.
I believe that was, what, about 14 pounds, wasn't it?
No, 11 pounds, 15 ounds.
Okay, see, even I make it a little
right,
bit better.
Right, right.
And of course, we've had controversy over that all right. through the years, but I reckon they basically finally got all that straightened out. It is a legitimate world record, and one that would probably never be broken because really there aren't any, you know, of the impoundments like they did back in the 40s and 50s that shut in a bunch of those old natural river fish that would, you know, that were, I guess, I don't know where their genes made them grow a little bit bigger. And, you know, when you talk something about a fish, a couple, 3 pounds is a big difference,
well,
isn't it?
Well, you know, I fished all my life, and I've worked on that lake for 39 years, and I personally got to see three over 7 pounds
yeah.
alive, that I know exactly what they weighed, you know, and that's a long ways to 12 pounds.
Right.
But it's still a great place, and if you want to catch a 4 to 5.5 pound smallmouth, I don't know a better place to come than Dalla Lake.
And, you know, these fish are, excuse me, are a natural fish here. And I know you see these fishing contests of these big largemouth where they put on TV and they bring in one that weighs 10 and 12, even 14, even maybe more pounds than that. But these are artificially created species,
right.
aren't they, Danny?
All are natural. We haven't done any changing on the genetics or anything on Dalla Hollow.
And I know the Florida largemouth.
They're putting a Florida.
Bred to get to be.
Well, they're putting them in the Tennessee River systems, and of course Chickamauga, it's worked down there. You know, it's worked well up to this point. They don't know what's going to do in the future, but you know.
And okay, now the different species that people fish for here. I know you mentioned a species a minute ago that if you're a fish delicacy person, and that was a shell cracker. Now, exactly what is that?
Well, it's a sunfish, and they've got some people call them red ears. And when I first went to work, there was very few in the lake. And probably in the last 7 to 10 years, probably as many people fishing for shell crackers today, this time of year, as is bass. I mean, it's just exploded. And you know, we have a great walleye fishery and a crappie fishery. Of course, we're stocking walleye every year. We've done that for over 20 years. And we're stocking black-nosed crappie and some black crappie. Sometimes we have trouble getting the brood fish all black nose, and we'll stock black crappie. And that's exploded. When I first went to work in the 80s, of course, I was working nights. You mentioned that for
right.
3 years. But then when I went to daytime, you know, I might see 2 or 3 crappie fishermen a year. And now you're there every day, you know, especially if you know, go up the rivers. They're pretty thick.
Okay, let me ask you about the crappie fishing. I know that as a crappie fisherman yourself, you have particular places where you know there's a better than average chance of catching some crappie.
Well, they move every day, Thomas. That's like in the spring. You can go in the back of these creeks, but they'll shad and they'll move in and out. With the warmer weather, they'll move back, and it cools up, the shad will move out. And they got the spider rigging up quite a bit. That's something I've never done, but they do that up quite a bit, you know, up Wolf River and up Eagle Creek and places like that in those channels. And then there's different ways to catch them. In the, down the lake, most of them, well, when I call down the lake, I'm talking about the Suffolk Creek area, down, most of them are caught out of the grass. Till they move up to spawn in the bushes, and they'll move to the back of the bushes, and you can take a long rod and a bobber and a minnow, and you know, and fish 18 inches deep and catch them.
Old-fashioned
fish. Right. It's the biggest thing on catching crappie and walleye, but it's like anything else, is finding them.
Right.
You know.
And I know that we have had over the years, and I don't think I've seen it in the past few years, but a number of years ago, it wasn't unusual for someone to hook a walleye that was well over 10 pounds in
right.
this lake.
Last year was an excellent year for 8 to 10 pounders. You know, the year before, they didn't catch that many big ones, but last year they did. And, of course, they're catching most of these big ones. They'll catch them here in the last of this month, May and the 1st of June, most time when they catch those jumbos.
And I guess maybe, you know, one of the largest walleye, I guess, ever taken in the lake used to hang on the wall up Cedar Hill,
yeah.
But it really wasn't caught, was it?
That's what I was told.
I think maybe that Mr. Dickie Roberts with that one, I think maybe that they found it in what was called the bend
right.
in the spring where the fish get too much oxygen in their cells or something, and they float up to the top and lay there for a little while. And
so. About in 82 or 83, Dudley Colworth was the manager of the fish hatchery, and we were shocking, and Dudley went with us. Dudley's from Wisconsin.
Right.
He's a walleye man. You
walleye
know,
territory.
And we dipped a walleye and weighted. It weighed 17 and a quarter pounded there at Pleasant Grove. That was the biggest thing I've ever seen, and I've never seen one close to it. I caught a 13-13 in about 1990, but I've not seen one close to that. But we went on, after we measured and weighed that fish and put it back, we went on the other side of the island, and I'll always think I got to see the world's record walleye. But it was so big I couldn't lift it at the full length of the dip net, and I couldn't get it in, and it got away, and I would have loved to weigh it. But they still, you know, they still several 10, 11, 12 pounders in there.
Okay, then another species that we haven't heard a lot about since Mr. Reagan quit fishing for them. And what species is that now?
I think that'd be muskies.
It would be muskie.
You know, he died. When was it, back in the fall or something, or last summer, I forgot, I went to his funeral home, but Mr. E.C. Reagan lived over at Willow Grove, and he's fished the lake. Well, he lived on it before it was built, and he was in his 80s, and I would be up there night fishing, here'd come a little boat, put, 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 by. I knew who it was. I'd holler at him, and I was so worried about him, I was afraid he'd get out there and something happened to him. He's old, but he loved that lake so much, and he knew every high place, every ditch, everything. He didn't have to have no depth finder, you know. And, of course, he caught a lot of those muskies.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's lots of pictures floating around with him and his muskie fishing. And I haven't heard of any, a lot of, are people still fishing for those much? Or?
A few.
Dedicated muskie fisher.
Most muskie are caught accidentally.
Right.
There's a fella from Bowling Green, Mike Vessels, come over and he'll catch one or two a year. In the wintertime, he just likes to go a little bit. And Don Worth, a sports writer, used to come troll for him a lot. And there's a club out of Kentucky, it comes down here, but I've not checked them this time. I don't know if they fished that hard this year or not.
But I know used to when we had people fishing for deep fishing for trout off the back of houseboats every once in a while, they would be reeling in a bait or something, and a big muskie would get hooked on it, and they'd land it. They're not a pretty looking fish when they come in.
That makes me think back when I first went to work in 81 or 82, I checked a boat there at Rock Island, a man and a woman fishing, and they'd caught a trout or two, and they said, "There's a fish here in the boat, and it looks long as my body." Said, you know, and of course I hear a lot of tall tales, and they told me all about this big fish, and I went on about my business and left. Well, about 2 hours they brought in the Cedar Hill. It was a 30-something pound muskie. They caught it out in another light. But,
well, we about covered fishing this morning, and I think another reason I talked to Danny about coming on last week, and he was doing something else last week. Was that something to do with sportsman things too, or?
I can't remember.
About sowing something?
I put a dove field in over Jackson Swamp on state management area over there, and I enjoy doing that. I went over and put the dove field in at Independence. You got the sunflower.
Okay, now, let's talk for just a second about that. Now, that's hunting over baited fields.
That's not a baited
field. That's what I want you to clarify to people, what a baited
dove
field.
Dove hunting, you can plant a crop, you can manipulate it in any way you want to, and hunt doves over it. You cannot harvest the crop and take it off, then bring the grain back to the field. So what we do over there, we plant sunflowers, and we'll bush hog strips through them when they dry down about the 20th of August, and we also have about 15 acres of brown top millet, and they'll cut and roll it up. Of course, when they do that, the seed's laying on the ground. It's been a really, really great place for the last eight or 10 years I've done it.
And that's another thing that, you know, a whole lot of folks here in this area love to do that really doesn't receive a lot of publicity and notoriety to, and that is the hunting of the ducks here in this area. And I know a lot of dedicated hunters that only hunt for those birds and nothing else. Well, Danny, I think we have about used up 30 minutes this morning. It's always great to have you here, and I hope we have had enough conversation for folks to kind of get an inkling and maybe put the urge in them to get in the old boat and go up on the lake and throw a minnow out there or some type of bait, or just go up and sit on the bank here once in a while and do what we used to as little kids.
We're so blessed to be here on Dale Hollow. It's the greatest place on earth, I think.
And we have the folks, I know our Corps of Engineers and all the folks that supervise that have done a tremendous job over the years, that I think maybe the tale has always been that the water is more pure there now than it was when they impounded it, which means somebody is doing one heck of a good job of keeping that place pure and pristine for generations to come. And I know you're one of the folks that makes sure that the fishing is done legally without having to write too many tickets or anything.
I don't write tickets, but I do hope when I'm dead and gone, I hope fishing is better than when I started.
Well, thank you, Danny, for being with us this morning. With that, we'll take a little short break, and we'll be back in a minute with our next guest. And thanks a lot for being with me this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center, a Grace Healthcare facility serving you from the heart, restoring dignity and rekindling hope. Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center specializes in rehab services for those who need therapy in order to return to their home after a surgery or illness, with a full staff of physical, occupational, and speech therapists. They serve patients' needs through multiple levels of care, including skilled, traditional, and respite care. Call today to speak with their admissions coordinator for more information. 931-243-3139.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back, everyone. Mr. Richard Accurso made it in here this morning, and we're going to get to him here just in a minute, but I think probably before I get a reminder in my ear to tell me, beat off the folks that are celebrating birthdays and anniversaries today, and we've got a little list this morning, and we'd like to wish all of those folks a happy birthday or happy anniversary for those celebrating it during this last period of time. And we'll begin with Jackson Stone Thompson. And his granny and Mammy Comer, they had called in to wish him a happy birthday on the 26th. And then Sonny Daly, I think his brother-in-law called in to wish him a happy birthday. So happy birthday to him. And then Crystal Dale Reagan, this past week, celebrated her 48th birthday. And this came from Mark, Tammy, Jaden, and Bill, I believe, was the names I got on that one. So, you know, sometimes it's hard to get these names off this answering machine because I keep asking them, would you repeat that? And you know what? That thing never has done it yet, Richard. It will not repeat to me what they said.
Typical machine.
Yeah. And also celebrating a birthday, Miss Rachel Burks. This is from her grandparents and her aunt to wish her a happy birthday. And then Randall Gash's wife called in to wish him a happy birthday. And I think his birthday, is this the first or this the second?
Second.
So he celebrated his birthday yesterday, and then on the 30th we had an anniversary, Lee and Tiffany Craighead, and the Craighead family called in to wish them a happy birthday. And then last on the list this morning, Mr. Will Smith, his Granny Strong and the rest of all the family would like to wish him a happy birthday. So we'd like to wish all these folks a happy birthday, and here toward the end of the show, we'll use our highly sophisticated, non-computerized system and pick out a winner today. And you can go over by the Clay Chamber and pick up I guess it's a gift card now they give you over there instead of a certificate. And I'd like to tell everyone that I didn't make it over to the chamber last week after the radio show, before our winter, Mr. James Gray had beat me over there to pick up his free cake. So I guess some folks are listening, and I guess they maybe thought they were going to run out or something or other, but he beat me over to over there. But they
must have been a hot day.
He was. And I guess he looked honest enough to where they believed him. But so just remind you that's how you go about it. Just go over and pick one of those up and take care of that. And we've got some folks over there that have won and hadn't picked it up yet. So we're probably going to have a little drawer cleaning one of these days. And if you hadn't picked up your free cake, you're going to lose it. So I reckon that's one of the, if you don't use it, you lose it type thing, I guess. Well, Richard, good morning. How are
you? Good morning, Thomas. I'm great. Thank you.
And I know, Richard, you said, you know, that you and your wife had a little accident earlier. I knew that you've been under the weather for a while. And we usually try to get you on a little more often, but...
Well, we're recovering. It happened back in November, and my wife actually got the worst of it, and she ended up with fractured wrists, and she was pretty well beat up, bruised, and we come through it okay. I mean, the good Lord was with us. Could have been far worse. And we're able to get up in the morning, stand on our feet, breathe. It means a lot. And really, thank God for everything that you do have.
Okay. And Richard, I know you ain't from here originally.
That's true.
I don't know if we ever asked you how you made it to Clay County.
Well, I was very fortunate because I did research. We came from Minnesota, and I had worked for a large company. I got a transfer to South Florida, of all places, so it goes from one extreme in the weather to the other. I spent the last 12 years of my career down there, but I realized South Florida was nice, but it's not for us. I was thinking about, I like where I came from as far as the people. And when I was in the military, my best friends were from this part of the country. And I thought, I really owe it to myself to look into that. So I ended up going from Florida to Georgia. Now, Georgia was great. It was nice and everything. But it got a little crowded. All the people from Atlanta were retiring, moving up. And I decided, and I had retired once, and my wife and I went back to work again. I was working at a county position where I was doing land research. I was doing GPS and GIS. And I realized there's more to this area than I realized. So I started looking a little bit, got into Tennessee, made some trips on the weekend, fell in love with this area. And I decided it was time to go. I'm putting my roots down this time forever.
You're going to be here with us.
Yes, sir. I love it here, and we're not moving.
And I know I don't want to call it a pet project because it's way beyond being a pet project. It has been with the American Legion here in Clay County, Salina. And I know there's some special things going on. And I think also you said that you've been doing some research on the history of the post here in Clay County.
I have. And I've often tried to find out historical things about things. I guess that's where you and I kind of connect. I really enjoy looking into the background of organizations. And when we ended up moving up here, I realized there didn't seem to be an American Legion. I looked around, I asked, and nothing. One day in the paper, there was a notice that there was going to be a meeting at the fairgrounds. Three people showed up, John Teeples, Ronald Bailey, and myself. We were about to lose the charter for the American Legion unless we acquired three officers, a post commander, a post adjutant, and a service officer. John became the, through our little dialogue, he became the commander. Ronald was a service officer, and I picked up the adjutant. So we got it going again. But it was really interesting. You know, the American Legion was founded in 1919 in Paris, France, on March 15th. And it was through service members that had came over to France, fought in World War I, and decided they were going to stay for a while, and they acquired enough people that they sat down and said, we're going to make an organization that's going to look at four tenets: Americanism, national security, children and youth, and veterans affairs and rehabilitation. There were a lot of people from World War I that needed help, there were a lot of soldiers had died and left families without any support. American Legion jumped into that. Well, Clay County did too. They did it in 1920. And the name of the post commander at that time was Grady Sidwell. Does that name ring any bell?
Very familiar name to anyone that knows anything of the history of Clay. He was also a state representative, I think, at one time, a lawyer here. And he may have, I believe he was Cordell Hull's first law partner.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, the adjutant was E.L. Monroe.
I think that would be Mr. Eddie Monroe's family, who was a mail carrier for a number of years.
That's okay.
So can you call him Richard?
Interesting. After that, that was 1920, the year right after they got the charter. Well, 11 years passed, inactive. Nothing happened. And then 1931, Grady and E.L. Monroe again decided they were going to redo this. So they got involved. And at that time, they had a number of members. I think at that time they had 37, 38 people, which is pretty good. And you'll notice when you go through, I've got the list that goes all the way to the current. And you'll notice that during the times of conflict, after World War I, World War II, Korean conflict, and Vietnam, you'll see the numbers of the membership raise. Then it'll fall off as we go. Right now, we're at 32 members, and the highest number membership was in 54 when we had 99 in the county. And that was pretty remarkable, but that was right during and after the Korean conflict.
Right, and we still had a number of World War II veterans in the county. And, of course, anytime, like you said, we do have, when you have a conflict that way, that veterans, of course, always, because they are people who serve and protect, they are the most patriotic group, and they are the ones that, you know, get, hey, we need to do this, we need to do that. And, that's amazing, Richard, with that information. And I know that we're going to talk about this quite a bit later on when we get a little bit more into our fair this year. I know that the American Legion Post is going to have a special part of the fair this year, the opening ceremony and those type things, and they're going to be saluted, I think, throughout the fair. And I know in a lot of towns, even towns this side, that we do have a post, American Legion Post building. And I know, I don't think we probably have ever had one here. I don't know. I think at one time maybe they met in the Methodist Church that was over here right off the square, and some of the buildings here. And I think you folks now meet over at the chamber.
We do. And we had talked about having a post zone, but, you know, when you think about the liabilities on that thing, you've got, first of all, you have to purchase it. You have the insurance. You have utilities. You need somebody to take care of it. And with a declining membership, and we're getting older, we're dying off, and it's getting tough to try to find people to volunteer to do certain things.
And, you know, I know with all veterans, and especially veterans in the South, seem like, you know, they went to the Army, that they served their country, and then basically what they, you know, they wanted to come back to the hills of Clay County and be let alone. And didn't really talk about their service days with anyone, close family members, and really the association they had with the other soldiers, you know, was pretty limited, wasn't it? And I know with this course, you know, you guys do, your group gets together. I know you have a ladies' auxiliary, and it's you've got a couple of things we do here every year. I know our cross is here around the square that we do in memory of all of our veterans here and that type thing. And, you know, and I guess it's hard to attract folks from some of our later conflicts when they do become veterans, isn't it?
Well, it is, and we've even approached a lot of the young people that served in Afghanistan. And, you know, it's difficult for a young person who's starting a family, working a job, and being up here to do some of these things. I was the same way. When I got down in service, my father tried to convince me to join the American Legion. I said, I don't have time. I've got too many things going on. It took me a few years, but I eventually saw the light. I could see the value add, and it was more or less, as they say, giving back, doing something. And the four tenets of the American Legion make sense, and we try to do those things.
Well, you know, sometimes, you know, we continually are bombarded with information about veterans, the veterans that have mental problems when they get back, those that are taking their own lives and things like that. You know, sometimes you think maybe if they would take advantage of this comradeship with some of the older folks and some of those type of things, that, you know, that this would be a great combative or preventive method for some of the problems that our veterans are having. You know, you're not in this alone. Coming from someone who went through it, not someone with a degree hanging on the wall that's going to give you advice.
I think you're right on that one, Thomas, because I know some of the VA clinics, you know, will handle some of those type things, but it's a clinical situation.
Right.
And a lot of the vets look differently at that. They want to talk to a peer. And, you know, we're open. In American Legion, we're happy to talk to some of these young guys coming back, and we'll do anything we can to try to work with them and understand what they're going through. And maybe we've experienced the same thing, and we can help them in that way.
And, you know, we lost one of our World War II veterans last week,
yes.
Mr. Bill Teeples, and I know he served, and we've got, I think there's two of them still left here in the county, I believe. Mr. Paul White and Mr. Billy Hamilton are still, you know, with us, and I know folks have been, I know we've had people talking to them, you know, trying to record some of their experiences and things like that, and that's something that's also becoming more obvious now, is to get something more to remember them by than just word of mouth and things like that.
I think it's very important to do that. I know we in Post 18 have tried to make a timely visit over to the Salina Rehab Center. Go ahead.
Okay, I said we'll come right back to that here just in a minute. We're winding down again as usual, and I think we do need to take a little break because we do have to make a little money to keep this thing on the air, Richard. I mean, you know, sometimes I get to talking to folks that are very, very interesting and interested in things, and I forget to do that sometimes, but we do need to work in a few words from our sponsors, and then we're going to come back, and I know we've got quite a few other things to talk about, and I know when I talked to Richard, he said, I don't think I've got anything to talk about. We could have probably filled up the whole area without any problem, Richard, but we'll be back just in a minute.
Tri-County Electric offers our member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from overwhelming your budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, owned and operated by those we serve.
Alvin and the Chipmunks want to remind you to keep bacteria in food from making you ill with four simple steps.
Needs to be a walk in the park.
Clean, wash hands and surfaces often.
I'm waiting for the rain cycle.
Separate, keep raw meats away from ready-to-eat food.
Yep.
Cook, make sure meat, poultry, and seafood is cooked to the right temperature.
Fire in the hole!
And chill, refrigerate food promptly.
Bingo!
Check your steps at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council. The road trip to food safety starts at foodsafety.gov.
Recycling means to use something again. Newspapers can be used to make new newspapers. Aluminum cans can be used to make new aluminum cans. Glass jars can be used to make new glass jars. Recycling often saves energy and natural resources. It almost always takes less energy to make a product from recycled materials than it does to make it from new materials. Don't forget to add up the savings and be energy wise.
Welcome back, everyone. And one of the main reasons that I called Richard at this point in time was, as I was reading last week's Herald Citizen out of Cookeville, and it's something Richard and I have talked about a number of times in the past, and it's something that's been in flux for a number of years, that finding the right spot, finding the ability to pay for this, getting it approved by engineers, and that is our Upper Cumberland Veterans Cemetery. And I think it looked like it's coming much, much closer to becoming a reality, isn't it, Richard?
It is. We've had monthly meetings on this. This program has been going on since April of 2013. And it does involve the 14 counties of the Upper Cumberland. And we've had some situations where we've had some near misses. We've had some volunteer land that were offered, but it didn't meet the requirements, the criteria of the National Cemetery Association. But we're currently striving to keep going on this. We've, you know, to acquire one of these, it takes, excuse me, it takes quite a bit to come up with funding. And actually, the funding for the land acquisition is actually through the state and also the local community to do. Well, we have figured out early on that there are 250,000 veterans in the Upper Cumberland, and we figured that if we could get a pledge of $10 per veteran out of each county, it would cover about $250,000, which would, in concert with what we could get from the state, buy the property. Clay County's done great. As a matter of fact, we have 534 veterans. That translates, if you multiply that by $10 each, $5,340. We got $5,000 from the Clay County government, which was wonderful and well received. And the American Legion Post and Auxiliary here in town together came up with $1,000 more. Then the Post 18 had a four-way roadblock. We acquired 1,363. And then we also had little canisters around, and we collected an additional 117. But totally, for the county, we came up with $7,479.24, well above what the criteria was for each county. Now that's gonna, that along with the $600,000 already committed to the current budget is right around $800,000. Cause the total that has been acquired so far in these collections from the Upper Cumberland State Veterans Cemetery Association is $198,702. So we're getting there. And the key is that we are trying to get the property located. Now, we had an early site selection committee of which I was on, and we looked at a lot of properties in this area. But the key is, again, that the property should be no more than 75 miles away from any of these veterans' families so they don't have a long commute. It looks like it's going to end up probably centered around Putnam County or North White County. And also they're looking at accessibility, transportation, I-40.
Right.
So it's getting closer. There's a outfit called Stream, which is a state of Tennessee real estate management that's taken over the site selection. They've looked at this. This is their bread and butter that they deal with the VA on. And they are currently in the process of looking at three additional properties. They won't say where they're at, but the focus is to try to acquire something by June, and it's very close. The reason they have to do that is they have to put in the paperwork to get the approval on some of the federal funds. So it's a long process.
Okay, now, with this cemetery, we were talking about, of course, recently deceased veterans being buried there, and also I'm thinking maybe the moving of some veterans into that cemetery from the old Hillside Family Cemetery, something like that, that's no longer maintained, and they're not receiving the recognition that is due them.
Yes, any veteran in Clay County, I'll just use that as an example, they can be buried there free, and their families are able to be buried there at an additional cost. And yes, there's going to be a lot of families that can be reinterred into a national cemetery like this. The beauty is this is going to be taken care of forever, where some
right.
of these small little family cemeteries, as we all know, as we age, they get overgrown with weeds and nobody really takes care of it.
And, you know, I think you may have noticed here in this county, though, that we have groups of people that during this age right now are very conscientious about locating those cemeteries and making sure they're cleaned. And I know Miss Mary Lloyd, she works with the Daughters of the American Confederacy, and you know that one of their projects has been trying to find every Confederate veteran. And by doing that, I know they have also found a number of other veterans that were buried in some of these places. And I think there's someone here in the county that is looking at finding and locating all of the soldiers with the blue uniforms that are buried here in Clay County. So we're looking at that, and like I said, this is kind of the, of course, we know that the Arlington Cemetery came about as a result of that great war.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know we've talked before about this location, and I think maybe one of the first locations was probably one of the most beautiful rolling hills that you would ever see anywhere. But apparently the people that approved it had never been to Arlington and thought it needed to be on a flat field. Isn't there something along that line?
It's unusual in that respect, because I have done a lot of research on some of the cemeteries, and some of them are beautiful and rolling, as you said. That's what makes the surrounding scenery just fit together with that.
You know, and it's hard to find a lot of place in this area where you can find a whole lot of acreage that you can acquire at a halfway reasonable price in this area, isn't it?
Very true, and that's what some of the VA has said. They've gone out and talked to certain people and appraised properties that were possibilities. And either the problem was that they wanted too much money when they found out what the purpose was, or they did not fit the criteria. Topography, some of the drainage on some of these land units that just don't drain
right.
at all.
You know, and that's, you know, sometimes that the thing you mentioned there is kind of a sadness of the situation of our society anymore, that seem like, you know, even in a project like this, we have people that are more interested in profit than in posterity. And, you know, that's not good, is it, really?
It's really not good. I wish people would look at things a little bit different, but apparently that's what the world is today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Richard, if we got anything, we got a couple of minutes left.
Do we need to draw a...
I've got one. I can do my drum roll.
Okay.
And today's winner is Crystal Reagan. So you have won the cake in honor of your 48th birthday, and you can go over by the Clay Chamber and pick up your certificate, take it over, and trade that in for your cake. And I know, like I said, I think Richard will be coming back a little bit later when I'm sure he'll be here with the group when we talk about the fair, some of the ceremony of things over there that's going to happen. And as we said, you know, we still got quite a few living Korean veterans here, you know, and you get to thinking about it, our Vietnam veterans. Now, you know, we're looking at folks that are now up into their 70s, and some of those folks are in their 80s now. And, you know, we're going to have to start, you know, taking special notice of those folks and making sure that we keep granting those folks the honors that they deserve, along with our modern-day veterans that have lost their lives during battle or whatever.
I think that's very appropriate.
And thank you, Richard, for being with us. It's always a pleasure having you here. And on your road to recovery, you and your wife, I'm glad that you guys are making it. And it's always a pleasure to have you here. And it's a pleasure to be able to talk about these things. And hopefully that our Middle Tennessee Veterans Cemetery will be up and going here within the next few years.
Let's pray for that.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for being with us today for the Clay County Corner on Kix Country. We thank all of our interesting guests, and we thank all of our fine sponsors. Our sponsors take pride in and care about our community. So when the need arises, make sure you visit them, or just give them a call and tell them thanks for sponsoring the Clay County Corner. So until next Thursday morning at 9, we hope you have a great week.